Nice to be with you this morning. My crew headed out very early this morning to go skiing in Quebec. Christine and her dad they're brave enough to take my four kids and two of my nieces, so I'll be eating Kraft dinner and hamburger helper all week. The last time I was here, That's okay. I will get rid of the weight here in a second. But the last time I was here, I looked at the prodigal son parable. And immediately after the service, Mr. Forbes came up to me and said, "Why didn't you talk about the older son?" I said, "Well, it's nice to see you too, Dave." But this morning, we're going to look at the second half of this incredible parable. But I'm going to read the whole thing just so we are ready to go. So Luke 15, beginning at verse 11. Then Jesus said, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the share of the property that will belong to me.' So he divided his property between them. A few days later, the younger son gathered all he had and traveled to a distant country. And there he squandered his property in dissolute living. When he had spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him to his field to feed the pigs. He would gladly have filled himself with the pods the pigs were eating, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, 'How many of my father's hired hands have bread enough to spare? But here I am, dying of hunger. I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands.' So he set off and went to his father. But while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. And then the son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his slaves, 'Quickly, bring out a robe, the best one, and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. And get the fattened calf and kill it. And let us eat and celebrate, for this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' And they began to celebrate. Now his elder son was in the field, and when he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. He called one of the slaves and asked what was going on. He replied, 'Your brother has come, and your father has killed the fatted calf, because he has got him back safe and sound.' Then he became angry and refused to go in. His father came out and began to plead with him. But he answered his father, 'Listen, for all these years I've been working like a slave for you, and I've never disobeyed your command. Yet you have never given me even a young goat so that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours comes back, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fatted calf for him.' Then the father said to him, 'Son, you are always with me, and everything that I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice, because this brother of yours was dead and has come to life. He was lost and has been found.'" May God bless the reading of his word this morning. Is it okay to put this here? I'm not going to disrupt the delicate balance of the universe. Okay, so let's start with a question. How many of you like lobster? Show of hands. Don't be shy. Okay. Lots of garlic butter, yes? Preferably with mussels. Now, I'm not talking about the McLobster sandwich. As a rule, Nova Scotians enjoy their lobster, unless, of course, you're allergic to it. But the reason I ask about lobster is because there are essentially two types of lobster eaters. See which category you fit into this morning. There are those who just eat the claws and the tails and maybe the legs if you're feeling adventurous. And then on the other side, there are those who eat absolutely everything, except maybe the shells. Former category or latter category? Show of hands. Former category, just the claws and the tails and maybe the legs. Okay, how many of you eat everything? All right, we'll pray for the latter category. Those who eat everything, like many of you, aren't satisfied with just the claws and the tail. You systematically take apart everything, suck out every ounce of meat, and some of you are even strange enough, I mean, bold enough, adventurous enough, to eat the tamale. You know, that green stuff in the middle? My grandfather used to swear when he was alive, he would swear that the tamale is the best part of the lobster. And you know what? Back then and forever, I will just take his word for it. People who read books can similarly be divided into two categories. There are those who read just kind of the nuts and bolts of a book, the main chapter. And then there are those who read everything. You read the preface, you read the epilogue, you read the dust jacket, you read the little blurb about the author on the inside back of the dust jacket. You read everything. And I'd like to bring this to the prodigal son parable, or the lost son parable, as it's sometimes called. Often preachers focus on the first part of the story, and I can't really fault them because it's one of those beautiful stories Jesus told that really drives home God's love for those who have been wayward and come home. I don't want to diminish that. But if we do the just read the first part of it thing with this parable, we miss out on something really, really important. It's the part which tells us something else about the Father's love. Something that would be easy to skip over, but maybe, just maybe, something that we need to hear. So the last time I was here, we focused on the younger son who insults his father. He wastes his father's money, and then with nothing but the shirt on his back, maybe not even that, comes back with his tail between his legs, hoping that his dad will let him work as a hired hand. You know, he rehearses the speech and he can't even get out of his mouth before the father welcomes him back. The father has a different idea. And it was mainly about two things: forgiveness and restoration. And instead of shaming his son, which is probably what everyone who heard Jesus' parable thought was going to happen, the father honored his son with a party and with gifts, and they begin to celebrate, and this is where we pick up. He says that the older brother, who we're introduced to for the first time just now, hears something as he comes in from the fields. And at first, all the older brother could make out was the low rumble of the subwoofer. He could hear the bass. And as he gets closer, he recognizes the song. Why, it's Celebrate Good Times by Kool and the Gang. So the older son asks one of the servants, it sounds as though there's a party going on right here, a celebration to last throughout the years. What on earth is happening? And nothing could have prepared the older brother for what the servant said next. You're not going to believe it. Your brother is back. And your father is so happy your brother's back home safe and sound that he has thrown the party of all parties. Not only that, he threw the fattened calf on the barbecue. And if there isn't anything else, I'd kind of like to go back inside, boss. As soon as the words are out of the servant's mouth, we're given the impression that just like a cartoon character, the older brother's neck and face slowly get red with anger and disgust. And doing his best stubborn toddler impression, the older brother defiantly stays outside and will not join in the festivities. When I was younger, quite a bit younger, my mom used to look after kids in our home. And there was this little girl she looked after, and she would kind of stamp her foot and say, "My don't have to if my don't want to." A little mixed up on her pronouns, but that's okay. This is what the older brother's doing. "I don't have to go in if I don't want to." And this, of course, brings out the father, who begins his attempts to get the older son to go inside, but the older son won't back down. He's not worried in the least that he's disrespecting his father by arguing with him in front of the party guests. And he cuts off his father and he says, "Listen, what's wrong with you? I've worked like a slave." Notice he doesn't use the term hired hand that's used elsewhere in the story. The older brother has a flair for the dramatic. "I've never disobeyed your commands." Probably a bit of an exaggeration. "And as a reward for my faithfulness, you've never given me so much as a can of kosher spam. But when this son of yours comes back home after wasting your money on prostitutes, you give him filet mignon. You don't get it, do you, Dad? You just don't get it." And here's where the older son truly reveals his cards, and it's ugly. He won't even refer to the younger son as "my brother," but with all the scorn and contempt he can muster, he calls his brother "this son of yours." This is ugly. But in stark contrast to the older brother's coldness, we once again see the comforting warmth of the love of the father. The father says to the older son, "My son, you are always with me. Everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate. We didn't have a choice. Because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." You know, somebody really needs to turn that into a hymn. "Everything I have is yours. The party is thrown because the younger son came home, but it's not just for him." And this is one of those things I think we miss if we just skip over the last part of the parable. The older son was and still is invited. Jesus doesn't tell us the older son decides to come in and join the party. We just don't know if the father persuaded his oldest to do the right thing. But after all, it's a parable, and it's left hanging to make us think, to get the wheels turning, and hopefully the heart soon following. Whatever the older son thinks and however he responds doesn't change one cold, hard fact. Now that the younger son is home safe and sound, as far as the father is concerned, a celebration isn't just appropriate, it's necessary. And nothing, absolutely nothing, is going to stop the father from celebrating. Not even a cold reception from the older brother. And just like last time, just so we're clear, what Jesus is teaching us through this parable is that when someone rebels and then comes back to God, God is so happy, he throws a party of forgiveness and acceptance. But what's especially important to remember and to understand this time is that the party is not just for those who have rebelled and come home. Those who have been following God all along are invited too. In other words, God wants us to respond with his loving welcome to those who have turned from their self-destructive ways and their selfish ways by celebrating with him. And this is precisely why, if God's love has made any difference in our lives, and if we understand, even to a small extent, the harmful effects of doing things our way rather than God's way, we should be in the mood to party when someone turns away from sin. There's that churchy word that we use all the time. Selfishness, and comes back to God. Just imagine this for a second. You hear someone sick, really sick, so sick, in fact, that surgery is required to fix the problem. So an operation is performed, and afterward, the tests prove beyond any doubt that the operation was a complete success. If this happened to someone that you love, you would celebrate. And if you didn't celebrate, there'd be something wrong with that picture, something terribly, terribly wrong. And there's something wrong with us if we don't celebrate with God when someone comes home to Him. We need to share God's enthusiasm, because how we react will go a long way to help people in that awkward time after they first come home. Because maybe they're embarrassed. Maybe they're ashamed. Maybe they don't know, or pardon me, maybe they do know that they can't go back to the way that they used to live. And they know that they've done the right thing in coming back to God, but they're not really sure what to do next. In other words, as we echo God's welcome, our welcome has to have hands and feet and be real and enthusiastic and comforting and assuring. But most importantly, our welcome can't have even a hint of self-righteousness or condescension. It's so easy. And it can creep up on us without even knowing it. It's kind of a stealth emotion. We can think we're better than other people. I would never do that. But we see this week in the parable, the older brother's response to the father's kindness. And just like the older brother, who couldn't see past what the younger brother had done and stubbornly refuses to go into the party, the sad truth of the matter is there are some who feel this way about those who have messed up and come back to God. And so there's something else we need to understand from this parable. It's that Jesus is pleading with us not to be like the older brother. Why there's this temptation to act like the older brother? We could probably come up with a laundry list that's quite long. I think part of it may have to do with our perception of God. Often it has to do with our perception of God. And last time I mentioned that we can sometimes have the impression that when we come to God and ask for forgiveness, we think He's waiting for us with a sniper rifle rather than lovingly waiting and watching, running to us. But I wonder, when we finally get that silly idea out of our heads, we kind of replace it with something else. I wonder if we think if God's enthusiasm for us wanes or grows cold after a while. Or if God's love for those who have just come home is stronger than those of us who have been home for quite some time. This is a messed up idea as well. Remember what the father says to the older son: "My son, you are always with me, and everything I have is yours." The love and forgiveness offered to those who have just come home has always been available to all of God's children, including you and me. And God doesn't want us to feel like outsiders, because we're not. We're not. But if we read this parable in the context of the Gospel of Luke, at the beginning of chapter 15, this is exactly what the Pharisees and the scribes, at least some of them, were doing. Choosing to be outsiders. They were refusing to come to this party that Jesus was throwing for everyone. I realize it's cliche to quote N.T. Wright, but he sums it up so beautifully here. I quote, "At this point, we sense that Jesus is not content to simply tell the grumblers that they're out of line. He too wants to reason with the Pharisees and the scribes to point out that though God's generosity is indeed reaching out to people they didn't expect, this doesn't mean that there isn't any room left for them. If they insist on staying out of the party because it isn't the sort of thing they like, that's up to them. But it won't be because God doesn't love them as well. End quote. But once this misconception of God's love is cleared up, we have to ask ourselves another perhaps difficult question. Like the older son, or perhaps like some of the Pharisees, do we not want to come to God's party because we don't like some of the things that the younger son did? Sadly, at certain times in certain places, the church has attached a stigma to certain types of sin, regardless of whether someone repented from those sins. And it usually goes something like this. The sins or the selfishness that I don't struggle with, those are kind of minor things. The sins that everybody else struggles with, those are the major ones. In their minds, in our minds, we've labeled those who commit certain types of bad behavior as the worst of the worst. But again, something that's kind of messed up in our thinking. We have to remember two things. First, if we read the Gospels with an open mind, it wasn't prostitutes and tax collectors who got Jesus fired up. It was the unmerciful and prideful religious leaders who thought they had everything figured out. It's kind of a neat exercise to read through the Gospels and look at the things that Jesus quotes from the Old Testament. And out of all of the things that he can quote, it's incredible to me that he says, "I desire mercy, not sacrifice." Second thing we have to remember is that when someone turns from doing things their way and comes home to God, no matter what they've done, no matter how vile we might think it is, God's acceptance and forgiveness is extravagant and full. Now, little sidebar. This doesn't mean that we shouldn't be cautious or create healthy boundaries depending on the type of offense that has occurred. What we're talking about here is this person's standing in God's sight. End sidebar. God's acceptance and forgiveness is extravagant and full. So even when people come back to God, like the younger son, smelling as though they had just come from working with pigs, instead of turning our noses up at them and refusing to welcome them back, we need to arrive fashionably early to the party and assure them that God can clean up any mess, no matter how bad it has caused them to stink. Because if we're honest, God has had to clean up all of us at one point or another. And God welcomes us all back to him just the way we are. Now, make no mistake, Jesus works with us and doesn't let us stay the way we are. But he never ever expects us to straighten ourselves out, get our ducks in a row before we come home, because we can't. Now, as I close this morning, I realize I'm treading on dangerous ground to suggest that this incredible parable needs anything else. But I think it does. More specifically, the younger brother needed a better older brother, who showed the same love his father showed him. And really, if we want to kind of take a step back, Jesus is the better older brother, the true older brother who comes alongside the father and invites everyone to God's party of forgiveness and acceptance. And Jesus demonstrates this in his life and ministry. It's my prayer for myself and for all of us that as followers of Jesus, we would reflect that same loving attitude, because this was Jesus' attitude. And again, this week, before we end, I'd like us to take a few minutes and think about this parable. May we be thankful that when we rebel and return home, that God welcomes us home. And not just kind of begrudgingly, which is, I think, what we sometimes think, but wholeheartedly. And thank God that we are all welcome at this party. Let's make it our prayer. Let's make it our challenge to ourselves that we will share God's love and acceptance and forgiveness and welcome to those who come home. Let's pray.